Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion on this beautiful summer morn with the beautiful topic of spirit. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America, and we warmly welcome you all. We will start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 185 of Miscellany and 79 of Divinity Course and General Collectania. The peace of love is published, and the sword of the Spirit is drawn, nor will it be sheathed till truth shall reign triumphant over all the earth. Truth, life, and love are formidable wherever thought, felt, spoken, or written, in the pulpit, in the courtroom, by the wayside, or in our homes. They are the victors never to be vanquished. May the allness of God love and the nothingness of aught else serve to cover the question of your protection. And the allness of good and the powerlessness and non-existence of evil be the reality of your thoughts. Mary Baker Eddy.
Very beautiful. Thank you, Florence. Okay, the watching point.
I was listening so intently that I... okay. Watch 116. Watch lest when you have entered into the conflict inaugurated by science and have made some successful demonstrations by crossing swords with error, you be tempted by a sense of stagnation and feel that you have gone stale or that your spiritual desire is waning, since you no longer enjoy the fruits of victory as you did formerly. It is possible that you may find that you no longer take the satisfaction in church activity that you once enjoyed. So you conclude that you have gone backward and need a return to your first love. But what is our first love? But our love for spirit, our entire allegiance to it, which antedates any belief in Egypt or loving anything, human or material. The satisfaction in overcoming error must give place to the higher joys of spirit as we are weaned from the milk of the word and are ready for the meat.
Thank you. Okay, comments on that?
Well, a few weeks ago in Florence Roberts' readings on a Wednesday night, she read from Unity of Good, and I've read this book, Unity of Good, I don't know how many times, but this statement that she read suddenly just popped out at me, and I haven't forgotten it. I've just been holding on to it. Man's refuge is in spirituality, under the shadow of the Almighty. And it just hit me that that is the only way to see anything. We have to make sure, is that am I spiritually seeing everything from God's standpoint, from spirit? Am I putting everything in spirit? Because that is our refuge. That's our only safety. And I love this lesson that reminds us of that.
Thank you. That's beautiful. And that is wonderful from Unity of Good. And it pops out because when someone's reading it with understanding, you'll find things that you didn't see when you were just reading it yourself. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Man's refuge is in spirituality. Boy, is that ever true.
Yeah.
Well, and it reminds me again of not rejoicing that the devils are subject onto you, but that your names are written in heaven, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Thought.
Yes, thank you.
I'd like to say something.
Go ahead, Sari.
Both readings were just so powerful together, like a seamless piece of cloth, spiritual cloth. And the humility that both readers gave is just amazing. This is something I'll listen to many, many nights and be grateful that it's available on our 24/7 reading room.
Yes. You're talking about unity of good?
Yeah, what are you talking
unity
about?
Unity of good, oh, as well as the watch. They were just seamlessly placed together as if they were written together.
Yes. You mean the morning prayer or the watch from...
Both, the watch and the morning prayer. That was just powerful. It's just, for me, very, very humbling to hear this.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, many people to the round table don't get past the morning prayer because it is so beautiful and so much in it to think about. Anyone else?
Well, I just wanted to...
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Just wanted to say, thinking on this watch and that thought of like the, you know, getting to a place where you're not as energized. When I first came here, getting away from that old life and learning about this Christian Science, I had this wave and I feel like it carried me like 5 or so years. And then after that, I had to like figure out a new way forward because that old Jeremy, I guess, was gone. So, I don't know. It feels like year to year, it's important to like refresh yourself and remember why this is so wonderful.
Thank you, lest we forget. All right, was that Florence?
Yeah, I just was going to say, I think that how important the Spirit is, that's why in John 6, it says that it is the Spirit that quickeneth, the flesh profiteth nothing. So our first love is indeed the Spirit. And in the Blue Book, page 78, Mr. Sedi says, look away from the body to spirit. My being is spiritual. My life, my intelligence are spiritual. My senses are spiritual. My life is hid with Christ in God, and there is no other existence. So the subject of spirit means a lot to all of us.
Yes, that's beautiful. Thank you.
And we all are going to have to face this one time or another. I know I've had to face it many times. You know, as you grow spiritually, the world, you know, as we see it, hear it, touch it, feel it, is going to try to pull us back into it. It's aggressive because it appears to be all around us. And, you know, we have to be like spiritual pioneers. We have to be willing to venture out into the, you know, unseen. Mm-hmm. Mortal mind would call it the unknown because it doesn't know anything about it. But it's something we all have to be aware of because, it's going to come at anybody who really wants to grow and is of great use to God and the cause of Christian Science. And I speak from my own experience.
Mm-hmm. I think also that's why this saying, we are in the world but not of the world, it's a good reminder.
Exactly. Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we can really be grateful for that seeming pulling back because it means that we are progressing, and progression is the law of God. So it has to happen. We can't be stagnant, but we sure want to be sometimes.
Yes.
In one of our watches, it started with "Don't let the world in."
Yeah. That's what starts to slow you down when you do. You get glamored. And that's why we have that watch of Mrs. Eddy's statements about travel, not to be glamored. This is particularly the season of it where you want to, oh, let's just go have some fun, kind of a thing. And fun you have when you're maintaining your oneness with God is the real joy and what's really meaningful. Because if you're just out pleasure seeking, it will
grab you.
Yeah, it'll grab you and it'll crash you. And then you do wonder, oh, well, things, you know, why do I need to go to church, or why do I have to do this or that? And it's a gradual progression. I've seen it. It's like watching someone drift out by a riptide into the ocean. And if they don't make vigorous attempts to get themselves back to their first love, which is the love of Christ and life, it can take you out. So there are many reminders in the Bible, and I think it's the beginning of Miscellany where Mrs. Eddy starts off with Kipling's Lest We Forget. And this is why we do what we do every week. They're kind of indications if you're getting dopey or not. Because if you come to a service and you think you have nothing to testify, no, nothing to say, or they're just ways that indicate your oil is getting low, then let's get at it and get over that instead of letting it go from week to week to week to week. No, rouse yourself. Rouse ye, rouse ye. No reason to go backwards unless you allow yourself. Oh, go ahead.
The foreword to Miscellany that Mary referred to, quote, Lord God of hosts, be with us yet, lest we forget.
Thank you.
Kipling,
yep. So remember what it was like those days before you found the science or found the real science. It was pretty miserable. I know I was miserable and I don't want to go back there.
No, definitely not. Definitely. I think that's a very important thing that you, your eyes are really open to the fact that life before was just no good.
No, had no energy, no good. Carrie said,
you know, we've got some great examples. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Tony.
We just have some, you know, great examples too from Mrs. Eddy herself. And she never got glamored by success. You know, she shut down the metaphysical college at the height of its popularity when she had all the material means to have whatever she wanted, and yet she lived so simply. You remember when she moved into Chestnut Hill, she had to have them like lower the ceilings in her room. She wanted it more comely. You know, she just, yeah, very humble. You know, she's just, you know, very humble by all that. So we, just because you might have the means to do something doesn't mean you should.
Most definitely. You know, Florence and I sometimes talk about these huge mansions and things that people live in, but my goodness, what do you do in them? All the upkeep it takes, and I don't know, it doesn't make any sense. And thank goodness, yes, Mrs. Eddy always, that's not what she wanted. She called Chestnut Hill splendid misery, right?
Yeah.
And last years there were very difficult because a coup was going on, and that law case was continuing in which they were trying to prove that she was insane and capable and all of this sort of thing. Of course, she won, but it's a lot for her to deal with. God bless her and what she's given us, and lest we forget. So we have this great privilege to carry this on, and it's very humbling.
You know, Mary Baker Eddy said, follow me only so far as I follow God. I'm paraphrasing. And this is so, so beautiful, because when we read, you know, when we look at the extra material, when we look at the textbook, when we look at the collectania or the different, the red, blue, and the green books, it has her tone, it has her feeling. And she feels like She's a spiritual friend who's just bringing us to God. And I know of people who've had those big mansions and they're getting bombed right now in Beirut. So they are going to realize all they have is God and God's love. So that's what we all have to remain humble about, that we only have God's love to go forward and not be glamorized.
Thank you. Yep, nothing glamorous about the material world at all. Ends in dust. So thank God we have this and this spirituality that we have, and that beautiful quote from Unity of Good from Florence's reading.
Page 57, in case anyone wants to look it up.
Thank you. All right. Well, we are going to jump now to Nancy, your contribution.
Yes, 2 Timothy. For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And Mrs. Eddy's beautiful definition of spirit from Science and Health. Divine substance, mind, divine principle, all that is good, God, that only which is perfect, everlasting, omnipresent, omnipotent, infinite. And then I looked up a few words in Webster's, and I loved these definitions for power. In scripture, right, privilege, ability, strength, to have dominion. I loved when I saw that. And love. The love of God is the first duty of man, and this springs from just views of his attributes or excellencies of character, which afford the highest delight to the sanctified heart. Esteem and reverence constitute ingredients in this affection, and a fear of offending him is its inseparable effect. And sound, whole, entire, founded in truth, firm, strong, free from error. And a commentary by Matthew Poole says, for God hath not given us the spirit of fear. Fear in this place signifies fearfulness or cowardice or poorness of spirit, in opposition to that holy fortitude which becomes ministers. This, he saith, is none of the gifts of the Holy Spirit and proceedeth not from God, but of power. And by power, he means Christian courage and fortitude, not declining duty because of danger or danger threatening us in the performance, but enabling us to encounter the greatest dangers and difficulties. And of love, love to God and to the souls of his people. Love so strong as to constrain us to be willing to lay down our lives for Christ and for his church and people. And of a sound mind, sobriety, a calm and quiet mind, a sound mind in the ordinary notion of it, or a judgment sound in the faith. Sobriety is the gift of the Spirit. Sobriety is a very general term and signifies the moderation and government of our passions. That which seems to be here meant is such a government and composure of spirit that nothing shall deter us from the discharge of our duty. And the term sound mind, opposed to a meek or sickly mind, staggering at every danger, may well enough express the apostle's sense, meaning, you know, Paul talking, writing to Timothy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is very important because, you know, fear is the big bugaboo. And as was read from Unity of Good, man's refuge is in spirituality. It's the only answer to all this fear that bombards us, is to know the allness of God, the all presence of God, and the nothingness of sin, disease, and death. I've given this to you before, but I've loved it so much when I was working to overcome so much fear when I first came here, so much fear of everything. And it's on page 139 of the Blue Book. Do we not all understand cowardice never conquers? To get rid of a temptation of any sort or to get out of a difficulty, we are not passive and let the wrong rule the right, but we struggle and thus conquer. We should not avoid the things that hurt us, but repeat them and meet them as their superior. Disease is a coward that leaves when you are not afraid of it. So fear will try to make you back off, back out of things. I used to think and say, oh, you know, I just wanted to stay home and be with my God and pray. and yet Mrs. Evans, she wasn't hearing to that. It was a cop out on my part. It was running from things that I didn't like to do or didn't want to do. It was a justification because it sounds very holy to stay home and be praying, but there has to be a combination of both. It's important, yes, that you have plenty of time, that quiet time to pray and study. Jesus Christ went to the mountaintop many times, but then he came down and mingled with the crowds. Then is your acid test. Have you learned anything? Can you control your thinking? Do you see everybody around you as mortal? Adam, where art thou? As the lesson out. Adam, where is your consciousness? Are you living all this holy truth? If you're wanting to avoid it, then you're not living it. You're just hiding in, as Mrs. Eddy calls it, royal solitude. So in my experience, Mrs. Evans was not going to allow me to hide out in my home. I had to come out and correct my thinking, because that's what made some of these experiences uncomfortable, because my thinking was all over the place. You know, if I went out to lunch with someone, or, you know, I didn't like this food, I couldn't eat that because of stomach problems or stomach issues, or I wasn't seeing people correctly, this one, that one. And so I had to face all of that and correct it in my thinking. The reason we read pages 390 to 393, they're the command statements. These are things you must do. And in doing this, you are overcoming the fears that would keep you in chains. I'm no longer a slave to fear. That beautiful song that, again, Florence found that one. We are slaves to fear. Now, of course, always the main question is, does God want me to do this or not? And if he doesn't, then you should not. But if he does, and you're just afraid to do it, then cowardice never conquers. And you'll find following this rule on page 139 of the Blue Book will help release you of so many fears. You face them. Go ahead.
No, in addition to fear, I think any other, all these other reactions that we may have also contribute to making error and thrown in error. Because if you're frustrated, oh my gosh, when is this going to be over? Or you are angry at it, or anything, any negative reaction gives the error life and it keeps it going.
Yes, it does. It keeps it going.
Yeah. Even sympathetic with it keeps it from acting.
Sympathy, all of those things, any kind of a reaction to it keeps it going, gives it power, and a life that it does not have, you give it that life, as Mrs. Eddy says, but you must face it. And even if you go and face it just once and never have to do it again, then that's good for you. You did it.
I've also learned that fear comes from a sense of pride. You think you're now you're a self apart from God. And I've learned that that's where a lot of the fear comes from, is you separated yourself from God because you have this sense of a self, a personal sense of self. And that always brings fear and all these other things you've been talking about. It's, and that's disobedience to God, disloyalty. So I've learned that. I didn't connect the two together, but that's very important, I think.
Oh, most definitely. That's the crux of it, of selfhood apart from God. You're denying your oneness with the Father. And yes, you're thinking you're doing something. Maybe you're afraid of failing, or you're afraid, oh, everybody's looking at me. Nobody's looking at you. And everybody's got their own problems they're thinking about. But that's how the era comes, you know, that way. And it is all self, pride. Yeah,
this is only happening to you.
Yeah, it's only happening to you. All these arguments. And as Florence was saying, this is what keeps the fear going, because you don't face it, you don't conquer it. And it, so it goes on and on, whatever form it seems to be taking. But again, always where God wants you to go, where you feel sent, you can be sure you'll go with poise and peace and joy and every good thing.
And that's why Mrs. Evans, our beloved teacher and practitioner for a while here, would just blast people if she felt that there was pride. I mean, she would be ruthless on people if she sensed there was pride. And it was very uncomfortable. And a lot of people couldn't take it and left. But those who did take it, let the pride be burned.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. We have learned that pride and fear are really just two sides of the same coin.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, what does John say about about fear? What gets rid of fear?
Perfect love.
Perfect love.
Perfect love. And there's nothing human about perfect love. No, you're right. If you feel you have a selfhood apart from God, you're in deep doo-doo. You have to love everything that God is.
Yeah. Love and fear can't occupy the same place. So when you're feeling fearful, ask yourself, how can I love? Well, what is it that I'm fearing, and how can I love this situation? Because love is a liberator. If you do that, your fear will go. They can't occupy the same place, the same thought. You're either fearing or you're loving. Even if you do something out of fear for your children, they're going to feel that, and maybe they'll rebel against you. You've got to do it out of love. So got to change gears and get into where you're feeling that love and not fearing for their welfare. Okay, Tony? Were you trying to say something?
I think it was Tom.
Tom from Iowa?
Yeah, I was just going to mention what Gary was talking about in the second chapter in Science and Health. I'm just paraphrasing, but where if there's inspiring discontent, how spiritual blessings might flow from such discomfort.
Yes, and that's it. And it's always good. People tell you about getting out of your comfort zone, right? Well, that's all good. And that's what Mrs. Evans did for me, and I'm sure a lot of others. She got me out of my comfort zone, kicking and screaming, but she did. And it's tough to do that and deal with someone's resistance and fear, you know, because they're doing something they find hard to do. But that's real love. If you love them enough, you will do that. Otherwise, they do stagnate and go backwards. And this is the purpose of a good church. So, okay. I want you to read Kimball, okay. Chardell.
Kimball said, you do not need to be afraid of thousands of things that you have been afraid of. And then he lists, we know what they are. And then he said,
it doesn't look nice.
2 millions of instances of healing through Christian Science have been based on the scientific fact that and attest to its verity. And these instances include a healing of diseases that have never been known to be healed by any other means since the world began.
Yeah. So all these things you're afraid of, once you enter science, you do not have to be afraid of them. And why? Because God is all. Whatever it is you're afraid of, God is all. He's there. And you just have to switch your conception of what it is that you're afraid of, and it will vanish. I've given this before too, but it's very important. Chapter 21 of Mary Baker Eddy, Her Spiritual Footsteps, speaking of the watches. The morning watch hour was from 9 to 10, when each student returned to his or her room to do the mental work to destroy fear and to recognize the presence and power of God as supreme in the home as well as in the whole universe. This work did not vary from day to day, except where special instructions were needed and given to us. I know it's a very good practice to do. Maybe you don't have an hour at that time, but devote a few minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever you can, to get into the sense of the presence and power of God as being all that there is, and to eliminate any sense of fear. I promise you, you will have a much better day if you do that. And look how they did it every day without fail. They did it. And it wasn't boring. They didn't get tired of it. They said, oh, gee, I'd rather go out and play tennis for a few hours. No, they did this work for their home and for the whole universe.
And if they did do something else, they also carried this with them. They didn't forget about it.
Exactly. Whatever they did. Yes. So spirituality, knowing your spirituality, is the really the antidote to fear, knowing the power and presence of God and his allness. Omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscient, the three omnis. And that is what, when you're doing your watch on fear, that's one good thing to work with, those three omnis, till you get it to a sense that there is absolutely nothing else. And you can do that. I used to think, oh my gosh, I can't do that. That's crazy. That's too much. I know. But as you work at it, you get where you can do it. Why not? And you know, that dear little story of that I read Wednesday night that Imogen sent about the little boy who had such a love for his mother, who was a, you know, loving Christian scientist, and who worked with that I am God's perfect child every day. And also the sweet little prayer, Father, Mother, God loving me, guard me when I sleep, guide my little feet up to thee. So when he was being a little mischievous and ran up to the top of the church roof and fell down, and he asked God to be there for him, and what did God say?
I'm already
here. Mm-hmm. He had a deep sense of the allness, of all presence of God. And he landed on his little feet and was perfectly fine from a 40-foot drop. So... And Imogen said she really feels that person was her practitioner, Graham. And it was her who spoke to him years later about it. But he was too modest or whatever to say who it was. But looked like all fingers were pointing in his direction.
Personalized.
Yeah, right. There's no need to personalize. It was just a beautiful story and one we can think about. I'm already here. It's already there with us wherever we are. Go ahead, Sarah.
Mary.
Yes,
I just wanted to add just what you said about that little boy. Last night, after I had a very intense conversation with somebody about healing, I was led to read. I've been listening to Things to Handle Daily that Karen reads, and from Mary Baker Eddy. And it's exactly, this little boy felt that he was working with God so much that was all the only thing that could happen, that he'd land the way he needed to land without, you know, any bruise or problem. Because the fear was, you know, completely not there because he was with God.
Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. There was no fear because he was with God. And in that, then you know your spirituality. And of course, we're all spiritual beings. And how can that hurt? Mrs. Yeah. Eddie says, I think it is in the blue book where, you know, if two shadows were to cross, there would, you wouldn't hurt. There'd be no hurt. And so it is with us. If we think we've fallen or bruised ourselves or anything like that, no. We know the truth about it. Or she says, you know, you call on your metaphysics. You are spiritual, not material. The scientific statement of being, which is also in this week's lesson. Powerful. You are not material, you are spiritual. So in some of these beautiful articles that Carrie sent, there's one by Duncan Sinclair called My Presence Shall Go With Thee. And again, this is a reminder of the all presence and power of God, of spirit. One of the most interesting and remarkable things to be noted about the seers of the Old Testament is their consciousness of the presence of God. It is undoubtedly true that the national concept of God was a limited one, but it is equally certain that some of the Hebrew prophets had at times an extraordinary vivid realization of the presence and power of God and were able accordingly to do wondrous things, wondrous in the eyes of those whose consciousness was less spiritual. And what peace must accompany that realization. One thinks of the occasion, for example, when Moses in difficulty prayed to God for his presence, and when, as it is written in the 33rd chapter of Exodus, God assured him, "My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest." Nothing is of greater value than to know of God's omnipresence. For to know that God is omnipresent is to be conscious that life and love and truth and good are ever with us, and consequently, that the supposition opposites of life, love, truth, and good are not, in reality, present anywhere. It is this consciousness of the omnipresence of God which destroys the beliefs of sickness and sin, those beliefs which so grievously torment the human race. Whosoever would be healed of these enemies to happiness and peace must strive to realize the allness of God's presence by affirming and reaffirming the truth with persistency, with assurance, keeping the thought, Mrs. Eddy's words in Science and Health on page 473, the God principle is omnipresent and omnipotent. God is everywhere, and nothing apart from him is present or has power. And then Christ Jesus lived and acted as always in the presence of the Father. He completely identified himself with God, stating that he could do nothing of himself and that it was God who did the works, thereby testifying to the ever presence of God. So is that how you live your life? And if not, or do you do it maybe sometimes, but not always? Well, think about that. Start your day with a watch handling the fear and acknowledging his omnipresence, omnipotence, omniscience, and begin to act all through the day that he is the only power. And when there seems to be something quite not so good in front of you, you can know right there is the presence and power of God, because in truth, that's all there is. And in really knowing that, you can change that picture. And if not immediately, eventually, it will. It has to. And those truths declared will continue to be working. At a time, it'll spring forth. I have seen it so many times. It was like the story of Jeremy talked about his children and what was going on with them. And he worked daily with Christian Science and Divine Love is omnipotent. It is indeed adequate to unclasp the hold and to destroy sin, disease, and death. The children at that time seemed to have a wrong hold, a wrong influence on them. And it didn't go overnight. It took a few years, actually. But suddenly, bingo, bingo, they got it. So that bingo moment is there for you. Just keep working. Don't give up on it. Every day you work with a truth. Or that one I also love, the eternal truth destroys, but mortals seem to have learned from error, and man's real existence as a child of God comes to light. So maybe, you know, we've all learned things from error, but that truth, declaring the truth, will destroy it. And God's existence as a child, or man's existence as a child of God, will come to light. Why? Because it's the truth. The capital. It's like declaring 2 + 2 = 4 over and over until, yeah, you finally see, oh, yeah, it really isn't 3, is it?
It's never been 3.
And 3.
And also, what helps me is to know that the error is always doing only one thing, that's pointing to the truth. It doesn't exist anyway until the truth is already established.
Yes.
So the error is just pointing right to it and lying about it, but that's what's present, really.
Yes.
No, that's a good point, because the error wouldn't appear to exist if there weren't a truth that it was the error of.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you see it that way, you got it.
Don't that makes me think of Herbert Eustace, yeah.
Yeah. And also in science and health, this is very important. Consciousness constructs a better body when faith in matter has been conquered. Correct material beliefs by spiritual understanding and spirit will form you anew. You will never fear again except to offend God. And you will never believe that heart or any portion of the body can destroy you. Faith in matter has been conquered. Correct your beliefs, and that's what we're doing. We correct all these beliefs that we have and put in the truth of the Bible and science and health, spiritual understanding. You do this over a period of time, and spirit will form you anew. What's the matter in your body or whatever, in your home or your life? Or spirit, it will form you anew. And I read, and this had nothing to do with Christian Science, but I read that in many cases, people who have, you know, very bad problems in their body, over a period of time, especially if that person is optimistic, happy, joyful, and grateful, those problems disappear into their native nothingness. You know, now everybody, oh, we got to be, you got to go to this doctor and check everything out every week to make sure you're just okay. And we will look and pick and do everything we can to find out what's wrong with you. And then we'll put you on an operating table and it'll all be okay. Well, no, thank you. No, thank you. We don't have to go that route. We can let spirit form us anew. And we will never fear again that any heart or anything else can destroy us. Why? Because our life is in God. It is in spirituality, in spirit, I should say. Spirituality is our refuge.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one more thing about that. I'm class of the whole thing about my kids is it did take a long time. But it happened at the right time for them. God gave them all the lessons from it. So if it happened earlier, like maybe when I wanted it, it wouldn't have been as much of a blessing. So
thank you.
You know, you got to accept that it's not in your time. So.
Thank you. It's so important. Yes. We want to push it and make it in our time, but there are lessons being learned. We don't even know what lessons are being learned. And as we've talked about, children or anybody doesn't inherit the science. They've got to come about it by their hard knocks, and they will. And all you have to do is keep knowing that
nobody can do it for you.
Nobody can do it.
Can you really?
No, you can't.
And you can't do it for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. No.
Even though you'd like to.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You would really like to. You'd really like to. But if you're working, now, if you're not working and you're just ignoring the problem, that's something different. But when you're working in the truth for yourself and for whomever, a close family member, which you have a right to work for. That whatever truth you're working on, it'll be a bingo moment for you. It'll come. Just keep at it every morning, your prayer every morning.
Hello?
So, yes.
That all these things, thank you for all these wonderful things. It reminds me of wonderful quotes, like it says, we learn through science, through divine science, or through suffering. And that one is always such a blessing. We don't have to go through the suffering. We can learn it to the truth of God.
Yes.
And also before, when you were talking so well about it reminded me of that Bible quote, seek first the kingdom of God, because first we need to go to God and to all the things that God is telling us to do. Everything else will come. It's so wonderful. It's so true. And it's been a big blessing.
Thank you. That's a very important statement of Christ Jesus, seeking the kingdom of heaven first, and everything else will be added unto you. And this is also a beautiful article Carrie sent. My name is Legion, for we are many. And this is by a J.M. Tutte, who was originally an M.D., a doctor. He became a rather famous practitioner and teacher, I guess. But he writes here, in place of the false statement, my name is Legion, for we are many, came the scientific statement, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, not a legion of minds, but one mind. Intelligence, indivisible, not a legion of diseases, but one disease, the fiction, the illusion, the lie that man, God's own image and likeness, could be less than perfect. The lie about health, man's natural state. Not a legion of remedies and systems of treatment, but one curative agent, the truth about perfect God and perfect man, science and health. The truth which applied to any phase of error casts out, annuls, and repudiates the lie. So that really does it. And he goes into it, you know, that the man in the story this week, the fellow that had all those problems. And when all this false was taken away, the false did not deprive him of anything, nor did he suffer loss of mind, body, or soul. But to him came the realization of man as the image and likeness of God, the only mind, hence his right mind, the mind of man. So it is. And I love that, because Legion, I never thought of it quite that way. It's true. All these diseases, all this, all that, there's so many. It's all one mortal mind, and we give it the boot. Kick it out.
I like that it didn't deprive him of anything.
No.
I remember that early on, like, what am I going to be without the junk? It is such a non-concern.
Yes, so. It is such a non-concern. And then one last, a beautiful article she sent about a man. He was traveling in the Rockies, I guess on horse. And anyway, they were in this really bad storm where they couldn't see. I mean, it was a blizzard, and the horses couldn't see. It was so dark, so dense. His guide with him couldn't see, and he thought maybe he'd lost his vision. It was that black. And they were right near they were on the edge of a cliff or something, so they couldn't really make a wrong move. It was pretty scary. Mm-hmm. So he says, he decides, well, I'm going to know that my seeing has nothing to do with eyeballs and things like that. It's spiritual. And he said, a flood of scriptural truths came to me. The Lord is my light and my salvation, which is in the lesson. God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. In thy light shall we see light. In other texts, I took the reins from the driver's hands and started the horses striving to know that error could not keep us from seeing the truth and the way. In 2 or 3 minutes, my companion exclaimed, "Why, I can see the road plainly now. Can you?" Okay. Thus, night and darkness may seem to come to us. The way may be obscured and we may be afraid. But if we turn to God, infinite mind, the darkness is dispelled and the way made plain, as it was for God's people of old. For as Mrs. Eddy tells us in Science and Health, there is no place where God's light is not seen, since truth, life, and love fill all immensity and are ever present. Science and Health. So you see, of course, they made their way back safely. As he declared the truth and refused to be afraid, because to stop there in the middle of a blizzard might not have been a great idea either. So they were able to continue on. Remember this. Doesn't matter how afraid you might seem to be. God is omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, and spirit is all in all. There is no other. So we're going to end today with some notes on true vision by Morgan Stanley. I'm sorry.
John Morgan.
John Morgan, a little bit different. a Morgan. So it's very beautiful. As you know, he speaks to the synonyms of God, and this one on spirit.
So he writes, "Spirit is the only true conception of being, quite separate from the human concept, and always correcting it. Correcting the view is a function of spirit. And so spiritual clear-sightedness is natural to me, distinguishing all things as they really are. Through spirit, I see all things rightly, clearly, correctly, distinctly, spiritually. This gives me discernment, so that I differentiate between one idea and another, also between true and false. This firmament of spirit gives me perception, perceptiveness, perspicacity. It opens the eyes of my understanding. It shows me what is real and what is unreal. The clear sight of spirit does not blind me to faults and errors. Rather, I detect them more clearly, but as unrealities. I discern only the good and the true to be real, and so my eye is single. I positively look for the real, the good, and the true. In spirit, good vision is natural, and it is irreversible. Because spirit is forever unfolding reality, my vision is daily increasingly clearer. I am glad to see old concepts and false opinions disappear. Spirit brings me new views, the true new idea, and so brings to birth in my vision the new man. It is spirit that does the seeing, not flesh. And the senses of spirit are indestructible and perfect. My outlook is always positive, never negative, because my spirit, my vision is spiritual." John Morgan.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.